Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Great Indoors. Now, this is episode 3 of season 8, coming to you from MWC 2024 in Barcelona. And in episode 1, Laura Dewar, the CMO of the GSMA, mentioned to me in her episode about the need to still pursue more digital inclusion around the world. And today, I'm going to speak to leaders from Africa and Brazil on how precisely they are doing this. Welcome to The Great Indoors, a podcast where we look at the technological implications brought about by the next industrial revolution and how this can potentially help solve the biggest problems facing humanity. I'm your host, Matthew Roberts, and joining me is my co-pilot and producer, Larissa Yee. So this is episode 3, as I mentioned. We're back in Barcelona at MWC 2024, and it's bigger and better than ever before. The Amdocs booth and our recording studio here are simply stunning and out of this world. I say that with no bias whatsoever. And of course, so are our guests. And as we continue this season, we will be bringing you actual conversations recorded from the biggest telecom show on the planet. And every single one is incredible. So what do we have in store this week? Well, connecting the unconnected in developing countries embodies a pivotal challenge and opportunity within the global telecommunications landscape. It involves extending digital infrastructure to remote and underserved communities, thereby facilitating their participation in the digital economy and enhancing their access to essential services such as education, healthcare, and financial services. Now, for many years now, mobile technology has played a crucial role in this narrative. The proliferation of mobile phones in developing countries has leapfrogged traditional connectivity means and offers that gateway to digital services. The GSMA's Mobile Economy Report highlights this trend, showing mobile internet's role in empowering societies and stimulating economic growth. However, connectivity alone is not the panacea. Digital literacy and the availability of local content are equally crucial to ensure the utilization of digital services is meaningful. And partnerships between governments, the private sector, and NGOs are instrumental in addressing these multifaceted challenges, ensuring that the benefits of digital connectivity are equitably distributed. Through such concerted efforts, connecting the unconnected transcends mere technological deployment. It embodies an inclusive vision for global development, where digital connectivity serves as a cornerstone for sustainable progress and equitable access to opportunities. So to get into this more and find out what's really happening, let's discuss this further with three guests to talk about their endeavors in connecting the unconnected. Firstly, I am joined by Sergio Beckerman, the CEO of Winity, and Esteban Arroyo, the CTIO of Winity, who will talk to us about what they're doing down in Brazil. It's really incredible. And then we have Nico Angelopoulos, the Group Chief Information Officer from NTN in Africa, who I share a lot in common with. And we have some fantastic conversations. So let's get ready. Let's have this conversation. Some really amazing stuff these guys are doing.
So it's day, what day is it? Day four of MWC 2024 in Barcelona. And I'm delighted to welcome my next guests to The Great Indoors today. We have Sergio Beckerman, the CEO of Winity, and Esteban Araujo, the CTIO of Winity. And they've come from Sao Paulo to be here in Barcelona this week. So, gentlemen, welcome to The Great Indoors.
Thank you, Matt, for having us.
No, my pleasure. My pleasure. And let's start with you, Sergio. Maybe you want to give just a brief history of yourself and your role at Winity, and then we'll ask you the same, Esteban.
Sure. Thank you, Matt. So my name is Sergio. I'm the CEO and founder of Winity. I also have a second hat, which is to be a managing director at Patria Investments. So my story in the industry started back 17 years ago, where I started in the business of private equity, making investments specifically in LATAM. and more specifically focusing on the infrastructure sector. So I joined a group, very entrepreneur group in Brazil called Patra Investments, when they settled an infrastructure fund basically targeting bottlenecks in several markets.
Right.
From this 17 years journey, I have passed through energy, logistics, and also telecom sector. Back in 2012, I started my life in the telecom sector by establishing a tower company in Brazil. At that time, we are basically launching the 4G technology, and we saw the opportunity to create a platform to deploy new towers, new sites for the whole industry, to serve the whole industry.
Yeah.
But at that time, at a very, I'll say, simple business model, which is to build and operate the passive infrastructure.
Right.
Moving on, as a group, we expanded our activity to the fiber business, to the data center business. And back in 2020, we saw, you know, the 5G deployment cycle arriving. And
yeah.
We make the decision to establish a new company. That's the creation of the launch of Winity. Basically, Winity goal is to be an infrastructure provider for the whole industry in Brazil.
Okay.
So Brazil, as you know, is a very sizable continental country. We have a very digitalized people economy, but with a lot of bottlenecks in terms of coverage specifically. And now with the coming of the 5G technology, there were a lot of commitments, deployment commitments, that were, you know, contracted in the industry. So we saw this opportunity to create a platform that could bring a different business model to the industry, which is to build all the network, all the infrastructure, and lease every single part of the infrastructure.
Okay.
So our approach is to build an infrastructure that is, I'll say, the most efficient possible solution for, you know, the challenges that we see in Brazil, but more importantly, to share all this infrastructure with the industry so we can pass to the industry what we call the sharing economy.
Yes.
Of our solutions.
Okay. Yeah.
So as of now,
yeah.
We have several projects moving with different clients, and we are, I'll say, very, very, very eager to design new
yeah.
solutions and yeah. provide, I'll say, what we can. What we support is our, I'll say, value proposition, which
yeah.
is to reduce the total cost of ownership of
yes.
the network in order to enable, I'll say, the coverage to expand to more challenging areas.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. So basically, you're providing, you know, the traditional model is a service provider goes out, builds the network, launches the services, and he competes with other service providers that have their own networks that they go out, spend billions of dollars on to build, and then another network. But you're actually building one network that those service providers or new service providers or organizations can then share and use. So you reduce the total cost of ownership, you roll the network out quicker, and you can serve a much greater number of people in area, right? That's essentially your proposition.
That's the end point. Of course, we're going to explore that during this conversation, but there
yeah.
is a lot of, you know, challenges to reach to that this end point.
Yes.
And that's
the end goal, yeah.
Our creativity
yeah.
and ability to create solutions start to play a role.
Yeah. And Esteban.
Okay, I'm Esteban Araújo. I'm the CTIO of the company. I have here a double hat of leading the technology discussions and design the solution, design the products, but also to develop the new business. I mean, we are designing new things that are not usual to be used in the industry yet, especially in Brazil. And my background is completely from telecom, mainly on mobile, so my previous positions was CTO at Nextel, CTO at Nokia Latam, and I came to this challenge and what made me feel really, really passionate about this job is the opportunity to design new things, to develop new business model, new construction, and to partner with all the industry,
yes.
bringing down all the TCO. So.
Yeah, wonderful, wonderful. Now, we just talked there at the beginning, Sergio, there's a journey, and we define the end goal. Where are you right now, would you say, in that journey?
Yeah, great question. So first of all, we are really young. I mean, we established the company 3 years ago.
Yeah.
But we managed to position ourselves as one of the key, I'll say, partners for the whole industry, large carriers, new entrants, all the ecosystem. We managed to position ourselves as one of their key partners to deploy and design new solutions. So we are pretty happy what we have achieved so far. We know that, I mean, talking about numbers, I mean, we are still on the early stage of our, you know, capital investment cycle.
Yes.
There is a lot to go, so our goals go up to 10,000 towers, 10,000 sites to be deployed, and we're still on this early stage. But what we are seeing is very relevant in terms of, you know, setting the right target. So first of all, I mean, we are pretty well positioned in terms of developing solutions on macro sites. It's a very mature market in Brazil. All the companies, there's a very competitive market in terms of providing solutions for the macro sites. But we launched last year one most innovative solution with Hughes Company, a satellite broadband provider that becomes our clients in bringing connectivity to rural areas. So that proved our ability to create a telecom operation from the scratch and enable that company to service clients that they were not able to service as a very competitive price.
Yeah.
So our belief that we will be able to expand that project and also attract other different clients that could leverage the same solution. Secondly, last year we managed to grant a very important dedicated system to be built in Brazil, which is the coverage of the subways in São Paulo.
Okay, wow.
So that will bring 5G, 4G, and Wi-Fi solutions for 2.7 million people that transit these subways in São Paulo every single day. So we believe that will show also that bringing solutions from our perspective can comprise even going to, you know, rural areas, very challenging areas, but also very dense areas that requires a more dedicated solutions.
Wow.
So we are pretty much established in that front and moving ahead, what we believe that will be a great opportunity for a company like ours and the ecosystem as a whole, because basically we are enablers of solutions. We don't sell gigabytes.
You're not selling to the end customer, right, to the consumer.
So I'll say that the first challenge that we have is to make sure that we are able to design solutions that the clients can provide the services and maintain these services in the long run. So a business model for our clients that is sustainable. And of course, once I do the investments, I also require that this investment is remunerated.
Yes. Yeah.
So making sure that I can approach the right clients with the right solution, it's key for us.
Yes.
So as of now, I believe that we have most roughly 10 clients moving ahead with plans alongside ourselves.
Yeah.
Those 10 projects that I mentioned will take time to maturate, because basically it requires other conditions to make the ground break and start to deploy the infrastructure.
Yeah. And so I was going to ask you, Estevan, based on all of that, which is a lot, as the CTIO, what sort of challenges do you have right now?
Yeah, that's what I would include on Sergio's answers. I mean, part of our job as a company is also to educate the customers. I mean, there's some obvious solutions and some obvious investments when we talk about densification. It's a no-brainer. I mean, there is revenue there and they need to do. So it's an easy conversation. But when we talk about new kind of services or to support to serve rural areas without enough revenue to make the business viable, we have to do a big education work with this customer. So besides the design of the right solution, I mean, the solution that meets the cost requirements and the quality requirements, we have a very huge work to show that it's really possible and the customer can really make money. So as Sergio said, we are covering localities with less than 800 inhabitants. It's really hard to see how you can make money on that, but we got it.
Yeah.
And it's easier because as we started and there's somebody already doing that, it's much more easier to show to the world that it's possible.
You're rolling out the network, but it doesn't matter who the end user is. The network is there, and then you bring in the partners. So I think that's pretty clear. But when you're building out the network, and you're thinking, what do I prioritize? Where do I need to put stuff? You talked like on the metro, 5G, 4G, densification, Wi-Fi. I guess it's your job, right, as a fan, to think about well, where do we start? Basically, with that network rollout.
Absolutely. As Sergio said, we do not, and you got it, we do not serve the final customers. So part of the design is the conversation with our customers that going to serve the final customer.
So they help dictate the rollout.
Exactly. Okay, that's how we incorporate the requirement for the design. So if our customer will support an industry or a rural propriety, not end users, it makes it drives our design.
Yeah, understood. So if you're doing it on behalf of a partner who's going to use the network, and I know that this is probably not to doubt the motives of regular service providers, but they're motivated by the dollars, right, and the money that they're going to get back. So is there a conflict with, we need to support this rural village here, where your partners are saying, well, actually, we'd rather it was here because we know we're going to get, more ARPU. Does that conflict exist, or is it, are they thinking more in just pure connectivity to those underserved areas?
On my perspective, there is no conflict because basically we are not serving only one client on only one thesis. So we can, I'll say, also benefit from, having clients targeting different market and leverage their ability to share the same infrastructure to lower their cost. So I'm going to give you an example. So in Brazil, we have a lot of CapEx commitment coming from the auction, the spectrum auction.
Yeah.
So the company, they are already committed to deploy thousands and thousands of sites by 2029. So the real question on that project typically are, how is the lowest price for me to serve this commitment?
And then we can play a role.
So they are not making the decision by, population because our regulatory agency make a great auction when they are already targeting where the investment must go on.
Understood.
So in that specific project, we play a role providing solution for them to provide the network at the lower cost as possible, and also enabling them to share this infrastructure with other providers that can also introduce further reduction in the total cost of ownership.
Yeah.
On the other hand, we have like different projects, what we call like more build-to-suit scheme, where they really decide where to target, and we plan all the infrastructure to reach that target by the deadline that we mutually agree.
Yeah.
So we have like several, I'll say, approaches to target the market, but one important element is that once we are neutral infrastructure providers, if I make one project with one client, it doesn't limit ourselves to keep pursuing other projects with other clients. But on the future, we believe that we can combine of this infrastructure and reduce, and provide for the industry the sharing economy that we had discussed before.
Okay, that makes perfect sense. That was really well explained.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, actually, we sit together with the customer to make the project viable. I mean, there's a, of course, there's some thresholds to make some project viable in terms of number of customers, in terms of prediction of consumption. So yeah. I really believe there's no conflict at all. I mean, yeah. it's a joint decision.
Perfect. Now, let's just switch gears a little bit. We're in Barcelona. Is this the first time you've been to Barcelona, or do you attend this show fairly frequently?
No, I think that is my fifth time.
Oh, is it? And, cool.
For sure, Stefan is much more experienced on that.
Okay, so that means this next question is... you know, when you normally come to this show, there's something that you remember, you take back, there's a key theme of the show. What's been that key theme for you, Sergio?
Well, for me, it's artificial intelligence, for sure, something yeah. that we have heard a lot. We are still discussing what that can impact our business.
Yeah.
We are seeing more in terms of infrastructure point of view. We are seeing more impact in demanding new data centers, capacity, so on and so yeah. forth. But we are not seeing any pressure so far on the wireless network.
Yeah.
But I mean, that will certainly bring more efficiencies for the whole ecosystem.
Yeah.
And indirectly, it can bring more opportunities to yeah. our company as well.
Absolutely. What are your thoughts on generative AI as well?
Yeah, I mean, it's the hot topic, right?
Yeah.
Everybody.
Do you know how many times I've talked about this?
A lot of. But yeah. actually, as I said, I mean, we in terms of impact on the industry, what we can see at this time is much more on the core of the network. Talking about data center, they put a lot of pressure on yes. data center capacity. As we are much more on the run side, we are not there yet. I mean, the applications are on the higher levels of the network at this time. So,
yeah.
But of course, there's a lot of benefits in terms of monitoring, in terms of customer experience. They can yeah. bring a lot of new, yeah. Easy of adoption in yeah. things. I mean, the engineers before need to study SQL and need yeah. to study all the language. Now they just write down on
they just talk to it. Well, they don't even write anything. Yeah.
So the life is much more easy.
And Sergio, I mean, as someone who's been in the industry for a while, what are your personal thoughts on generative AI? Is it something that you're like, wow, this is incredible? Are you more cautious about it? Are you what's your general personal feeling of it as a technology step change, if you will?
Well, I think that for sure will be transformational for the industry, for sure. I think that there will be a huge impact on the human part of the industry, as Stefan was explaining, you know, that will facilitate a lot of tasks and also the requirement of people will be, I'll say, probably yeah. reduced dramatically.
Yeah.
So I think that will bring a lot of efficiencies in terms of costs and a lot of pressure in terms of, you know, people skills and how to deal with this technology. I'm really, really concerned about the regulation part of this technology. I think it's a must to have a regulation on such a disruptive technology. And I think that's a global team. I think I'm not so deep in that discussion, but I would assume that somehow some cooperative discussions, worldwide speaking, must take place shortly.
Yeah. What do you think? Are you excited, Estefan?
Yes, a lot. Actually, a lot. But I believe people cannot be lazy with this technology. I mean, all of us, we need to develop a lot of critical sense on that, because it's very easy to make a question and you take the answer as the truth. So the people will need really, besides all the regulation aspects, I believe there's some mindset to be changed. I mean, people will need to develop a really critical sense.
And it's, I've been coming to this show for years, I've never seen the whole thing just go so crazy on one topic.
That's very true.
It really is incredible. So we're almost out of time, gentlemen. I think we've had a wonderful conversation. I think what you guys are doing is fantastic. It's fantastic for the people of Brazil, connecting any underserved communities with any connectivity just changes the way of life exponentially and dramatically. So I think what you're doing is admirable. I think it's wonderful. I want to wish you all the best, and I'm rooting for your success, because I think it's so such an important, wonderful initiative for the people of Brazil. But before we finish, we do something called TGI to Go, which is a fun quick fire round. So are you ready for TGI to Go?
Sure, let's go for it.
TGI to Go.
So, Sergio, football or basketball?
Football.
What's your team?
Brazilian football, right?
Yeah,
American football,
no,
Brazilian football.
Yeah. What's your team?
Corinthians.
Okay. I'll tell you my team in a minute. Estefan, football or basketball?
Basketball.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
But you're Brazilian, right?
Yes, but I don't like football. I don't like coffee. I'm a weird kind of Brazilian.
And who's your favorite basketball team?
I do like Atlanta Hawks. I live in Atlanta.
Okay. Wonderful. Now, I'll tell you my team. I'm a Liverpool supporter. I'm from England originally. I live in Canada. And, of course, Liverpool has had and has some great Brazilian players in the team.
Firmino, right?
Roberto Firmino was one of my favourites. Fabinho just left us. Obviously, our goalkeeper, Alisson Becker, is probably the best goalkeeper in the world as far as I'm concerned. So I'm a huge football fan. And my team, Liverpool, won last night as well. So I was quite pleased about that.
Congrats.
Thank you. Question number two. This is a bit more technical, a bit more... Do you prefer, if you've used these, ChatGPT-4 or Gemini Advanced?
Great question. I'm not a heavy user of neither of them.
So okay.
Let's see, none of them.
Okay, no problem.
I use Gemini Advanced.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Awesome. How do you find it? Good?
Good. Helping me a lot on software development. I really use it a lot.
Yeah. Awesome. Great. Okay. It's the weekend. You're going to go kayaking or hiking?
I love the sea, so kayaking.
Okay. Do you live near the sea?
No. My wife was born in the sea city, but right. I moved it to São Paulo.
Okay. Excellent.
Kayaking, for sure.
Yeah.
I was born in Rio. I grew up in Salvador. All sea sides.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I have team members in São Paulo, and it's the summer still in Brazil, and I live in Canada, so minus 20, snowing, and then I have a call with Olivia. I don't know if you know Olivia. And it's always, she's always got a nice tan, and it always looks, and I'm like, oh, I wish I was in Brazil. Anyway, there we go. And my final question, and I've changed this a little bit, who's your favourite footballer? Pelé or Bobby Charlton? I think this is a pretty
I didn't see Pelé playing, but I mean, as a Brazilian, I must say Pelé for sure.
Of course.
No question.
I know. I don't know who wrote these. I don't know.
Was not you?
This. No, it wasn't me. Well, maybe. It may have been generative AI. There we go.
Yeah, that's exactly.
So, guys, I want to say thank you for joining me today. I've really enjoyed meeting you. Really enjoyed the conversation. Like I said, I think what you're doing is fantastic, and hopefully, we'll see you here again in 12 months.
Sure.
We can have another conversation and see how things are progressing. I think it would be great.
That would be great. Thank you so much. It was a really
thank
good
you, Matt, for having us.
And away we go. So, welcome everybody to day two of MWC 2024. It's early Tuesday morning, and we're ready to kick things off today. And I'm delighted to be joined from NTN, Mr. Nikos Angelopoulos, who's the Group Chief Information Officer at MTN. Welcome, Nikos.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
And thank you for the early start. And we've had some technical glitches, but I think we're over
it. It was just a bumpy road, but it was a perfect opportunity for having a good coffee.
Of course. So for our listeners, Nikos, give us a bit of your background, your history, how you ended up at MTN in South Africa, if you could.
Of course. So I'm born Greek. I actually born and brought up in Greece. I studied physics in the University of Athens. did a radio engineering degree there. Then, as every Greek person, every Greek student dreams of going to the UK, so I actually went to Imperial, had a degree there.
Right.
And I was caught, actually it was a degree in digital communications.
Right.
1,000 years ago.
Right.
I'm surprised that people actually did have digital communications at that time. I was caught in the milk round. It was a very unexpected kind of a new experience for me. And I was hooked by the Formula One racing car that Andersen Consulting at the time had brought to the campus.
Right.
And then opportunity came. I joined Andersen Consulting back in the day in London and spent a good 16 years.
Wow. So you're practically British.
I could have been, actually. I could have even been eligible for a passport, but little did I know, I didn't get it at the time.
I have a very similar story on that front, honestly, yeah.
So I stayed with Accenture, Andersen Consulting and Accenture for 16 years. I did a lot of financial services, worked in the London Stock Exchange. Very interestingly, it was a big, you know, pot of luck. I've been working on digital communications since my very first assignment. It was the migration of an open outcry market, the one that you see in the movies, to a trading platform.
Wow!
At the time, and it was a great experience. Amazing to see people launching, using gold mice for the show of the launch. It was a fantastic, fantastic learning as well to be with hundreds of people in very large transformational teams. Mm-hmm. And then, thank God for Sky and digital broadcasting.
Right.
Digital satellite distribution of content, and all the cable operators were very concerned, and very big projects came up. So I actually moved to telecommunications.
Right.
Within Andersen Consulting, I spent a lot of time with Telewest, with cable and wireless communications, with NTL.
I was just going to say, do you remember Telecentral? They were a little cable operator in the UK that was then acquired by NTL. But they were built up of Swindon. And the reason I know them is when I was at university in Reading, I worked at Telecentral for a while, and then they became NTL, and then Virgin after that.
Well, there you go. So yes.
But when you said Telewest, I was like, that was a blast from the past.
So I have lived a lot of time in Woking, Hook, in Watford, and all the exotic places.
I live near Hook. I lived in Woking.
So I think it's the M3, right?
I've done
the M3 up and down far too many times. So then, you know, eventually I built a career on television related experience.
Yeah.
So we spent, I mean, that gave me amazing opportunities. I traveled practically everywhere. All the properties of Liberty Global, so UPC, Netherlands, all the way to Tokyo, Comcast in Philadelphia, and many other places that Liberty has interest. So, yeah, built a career on television, digital television, which makes walking in this place almost impossible. Every 100 meters, there's another 5 people that you come across from all these travels. So it's a fantastic experience to be in Mobile World Congress and connect with all the people you know from the years.
Yeah.
Eventually, the time came, and I changed from consulting into the industry. So I joined Vodafone. So I became the CIO of Vodafone Greece. Did a big business transformation in Vodafone Greece for 3 years. Subsequently, I moved to Italy. I became the CIO of Vodafone Italy.
Right.
Vodafone Italy and South Europe, amazing experience and opportunity to be in such an amazing organization. Again, also being a Greek non-Italian speaker in Italy, that was another experience as well for the first time.
You know, we have so much in common because I worked at Vodafone Group as well in Paddington and in Newbury.
Which years was that?
I was at Vodafone UK from 2002 to 2005, and then I was at the group from 2008 to 2011.
So we coexisted then, because I joined 2008.
Ah, right.
So I was with my, you know, extremely important person in my life, Mr. Albert Hitchcock,
who
used to be the group CIO at the time, and of course Steve Pusey.
Yes,
and Alberto Ripepi, who is of course still with Vodafone, and Margarita and everything. No, it was a fantastic group of people. So it was a great run.
Yeah.
Spent from 2008 until 2016 in Vodafone.
Wow. Yeah.
Then I thought it's about time to go and find some new people to meet. So I went to Dubai.
Wow.
So
wow.
I moved to Du, became the executive vice president of engineering in Du in the Middle East.
Yeah.
And then it was just 2 years into the role and the opportunity came to actually join MTN. So MTN, for your listeners, is actually the largest telecom operator in Middle East and Africa. We are edging close to 300 million customers.
Wow.
In 17, 18 countries. So there is a very, very big operation, extremely important operation for the people in the continent, really transformational for the lives of people. So until you actually join an MTN environment, you really don't have the feeling of how you can actually change people's lives. So telecommunications in Europe and in the Western world is a fantastic and a very important element of the economic life.
Yeah.
In Africa is actually life.
Yeah.
Is a fundamental existential enabler. So it's a great experience. So becoming the group CIO for such a large and important organization, a meaningful organization from societal perspective as well, it was something I couldn't resist the temptation.
Yeah.
So with the support of my wife, of course, that it's not a small feat to actually move to Johannesburg.
Yeah.
Especially at the time we had, when we took the decision, we had a 2-year-old son and my wife was pregnant with twins.
Oh, right. Okay.
So it was a very, very big decision to move to South Africa, but the one we've never regretted, and the family moved to South Africa. And since 2018-19, we're actually absolutely devouring and enjoying the amazing
life
and the amazing things that the country and the continent have to offer.
Wow, that is quite a story. And not only is it quite a story, I feel like I have so much in common. Really, Nick, I moved to Canada in 2016 with 3 small children and my wife expecting number 4.
Oh, that's good. Even more brave.
We moved over and we've been in Canada for 8 years now. So I know the big move and it's quite an adventure, right?
Absolutely. A big change in your life and
A
lot of things to juggle, including, you know, family in Greece, parents, brothers, and so on and forth. You know, it's a very, you know, it's far.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, London, Milano, even Dubai, is like all of them are 3-4 hours flight.
Just
hop on and hop off anytime you like, practically. And, you know, the other side of the world is it's a much more challenging and taxing to be there. So big sacrifice, but to be honest, it's the rewards have been phenomenal.
What I thought was interesting, I watched that interview with Sam Altman from OpenAI and Nadella from Microsoft in Davos. And when Nadella was asked about what he thought was most profound about generative AI, he mentioned the developing world, India, and how it's managed to get there and make a difference faster than any other technology. Is that what you're seeing in Africa?
So we're seeing obviously huge speed and huge uptake, and it's really the potential that you can start feeling is actually very, very encouraging. I mean, the way I look at it is that it's really a skill leveler. So it enables a lot of people to do things that otherwise wouldn't be able to do.
Yeah.
And you can go from the most basic thing, right? I mean, you can actually do a lot of things on Excel that you couldn't do otherwise because you wouldn't know how to do it.
Yeah.
Lots of people. But that's the most basic. I'll go all the way to the end of the scale. I mean, we like, for example, we have a story, right? The story is there is a lot of farmers. And a lot of farmers, you know, all the farmers live and succeed and have a life on the good quality of their crops. And crops have diseases.
Yeah.
And you may very easily get caught out and, you know, a crop may be damaged or destroyed. And there is enablement from AI capability to actually detect diseases on the crop just by using your mobile phone. and be able to act quickly.
Yeah.
And you know, prevent material damage or a disaster from happening. And that wouldn't be possible without firstly the connectivity, because you know the connectivity is the absolute must have.
Yeah, yeah.
And secondly, the technological solutions that an AI enables. So you see, there is, it, I mean, the spectrum of opportunities is limitless. And I like saying that we had a panel yesterday, and someone said, you know, what do you think is the biggest challenge? And in my view, the biggest challenge, one of the biggest challenges, because there's plenty of challenges, obviously. I mean, we can talk for hours about, you know, responsible AI and skills and of these things. But I think the biggest challenge is actually the extent of our imagination.
Yeah.
How imaginative can we be to actually think of new things to do and new ways of doing them.
Yeah.
That really unleash the power of what AI can offer in a responsible way, so we can actually have huge impact and material economic contribution and really elevate people to the next level.
But this is really amazing, because obviously when I ask people on this podcast what's generative AI going to do for telecoms, I get, you know, the regular stuff. But then I ask the guests, what do you use it for? And I got completely different answers. Being in the industry for over 20 years, I don't think we've seen anything like this before. Do you think?
No, I agree with you. And I personally believe that, you know, there's a lot of technologies we have seen throughout the year, right? You know, I was here, this is my 18th Mobile World Congress. So 3-4 years ago, we were talking about Metaverse. I personally, I mean, people who know me know, I personally had, you know, a little bit of a... I was not that excited. I know it looks exciting, but I couldn't see that becoming, you know, really, really to take up.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, there's plenty of great applications you can use, but I don't see it taking the world by storm, whereas AI is just like inevitable. I mean, it's going to take the world by storm. The capabilities and the potential that you can create value and excitement is enormous. And it is very, very easy to use, which is the biggest barrier, in fact. You know, it's so straightforward and so simple. And as I said, it's a skill leveler. It enables people who are less skilled or had less opportunities to learn things
to come up
to actually, you know, leapfrog that gap and be able to operate on a comparable level, and you can do whatever you want, basically, as long as you're a little bit careful.
So we had
a fantastic case yesterday. We actually had a demonstration with generative AI creating content, and one of the content was, you know, many times we talk about, you know, these scary stories of, you know, if I use my kids' photographs, you know, someone can portray them in the future and create, you know, there's a fantastic, you know, video examples and stories from other operators who have done some very great work on responsible AI. But this was a different case. Actually, it was taking a photograph of you and trying to imagine it how you would have been 30 years ago.
Right.
A young version.
Like a time machine type
backwards time machine. Yeah. And then, you know, travel in history, so it was presenting a composition of an image in the Middle Ages. Let's say, for example, like a knight or whatever, and it actually was so funny. They actually produced two left shoes. Everything was looked perfect, right? But it was two left shoes. It was not a proper one left and one. So being the father of toddlers, and having banana feet and wearing the wrong shoes. I actually noticed just because of that. but these are kind of, you know, teething problems. Right? The opportunity will materialize, the capabilities will become better and better, and the maturity will be all over the place. So the things you can do is actually, you know, limitless, right? And how can you choose to make things much, much better is actually really, really the place and the field where the competition will happen.
Yeah.
Because, you know, how well are we going to think about new ways of imagining what experiences you can create, and new ways of rethinking completely from scratch what processes you're going to use in the business, what capabilities you're going to unlock.
Yeah.
And I was saying that, you know, back in the day, in our Anderson Consulting background, the most common term at the time was business process reengineering, right?
Right, yeah. Yeah.
So I think that now we should be talking about business process reimagining, not reengineering, because we don't want to just engineer. We want to imagine different ways of doing things differently from starting from the capabilities and trying to think how we can use technology capabilities to actually make a big change.
And I think for Africa, with other new technologies that have come in over the years, the developing world was always at the back of the line, right? In their adoption for economic reasons or for whatever reasons. But for me, with generative AI, it's almost universal. It's not just some exclusive people in California that have access to this. It's universal. So as soon as the developing world, when it has the connectivity...
Yes, absolutely.
And the imagination, what it will do, when we talked about GDP growth from mobile introduction, you can see the huge jumps. I mean, generative AI is going to have a similar effect, right?
And also the people are very hungry for these things. They really get very quickly engaged.
Yeah.
In a way, also, they are benefiting from a lack of a status quo. Because many times, right, you know, the change comes from a place where didn't have anything and really jumped into the new things quickly.
Yeah.
Whereas if you are, you know, used to, you know, certain ways, it may be more difficult to innovate. So, I mean, we are very proud, and we talked about OpenAI before, we are very, very proud that we jumped on the bandwagon relatively quickly. I mean, I wouldn't say the first, but, you know, at the first wave.
Right.
And we try to explore how generative AI can actually change the way we engage with our customers and with our employees. And I'm very proud that actually we are featured in Microsoft. So I know you are partnering very closely with Microsoft. So in Microsoft's presence in Mobile World Congress, actually we have been endorsed by Microsoft that as one of the, I think, three or four global clients on how we use OpenAI capabilities. So if you go by, there is our two digital assistants. So I don't like calling them chatbots, to be honest.
Right.
I like to call them digital assistants, as many other people do.
Yeah.
So Ziggy is an assistant in Nigeria, and Sia from Sia Kolisi. I'm sure you follow rugby.
Yes.
So
yes.
The captain of the South Africa's national rugby team. Three times world champions and proud, very proud to be the jersey sponsors, the prime sponsors of the rugby team in South Africa.
Yeah.
Excuse me. So Siga is our employee digital assistant in South Africa. And you see, it's actually fascinating just to watch how customers, how users, whether customers or employees, are actually engaging in conversations. It's much more natural, it's much more, you know, it flows much better. You see that there is no menus or stuff, you know, you can actually have a conversation, yes, a text-based conversation, but a conversation. And what's happening is, I mean, it's much more engaging for people, which makes it productive for people and productive for us. Because one of the things that happens is, like, we have been having chatbots for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, even voice bots. I remember back in when I was in Vodafone Greece, we actually launched what we used to call voice portals. Right? And you know very well, right? They were successful, but, you know, you were looking for what is the star button to go quickly to talk to someone, right?
Do I
press zero to go straight behind the queue, or do I press the star just to get out of the menu, right? So you see that this is actually diminishing. You see the behavior being, you know, one that is endorsing the agent as a legitimate counterpart to interact with. We have millions of customers. I mean, Nigeria is our biggest operation. It's more than 80, 85 million customers. Mm-hmm. And we already had the first few million, I mean, not 80, but, you know, in the single digits of having a conversation and returning. And that means that, you know, the customers do get served in a better way, in a faster way.
Yeah.
We get to save, obviously, because this is, you know, every conversation completed in the digital assistant space is one that doesn't go to the call center. and you know, overall enables the organization to be more productive and the customers to be happier. So it's really a place where you can see technology creating value in the field. Yeah. And the same with the employees. I mean, you know, how many times, you know, in every way you're trying to find things, you have to call someone and, you know, where is this policy? Where is this document? What am I missing?
You're
occupying yourself and occupying the other person. The person may not know where it is. And,
You
know, we are not, organizationally, we're not the best people in the world. I mean, no corporation is really great at this thing, right? And having this capability, I mean, I was looking the other day myself, just trying to find, you know, oh my God, this presentation I did, right, for the board of that country, where is it? Where is it? We're all very busy people. We are flying around. We have multiple devices. And yes, we have everything on one drive, but still, even on one drive, right? Yeah. Where exactly is it? And you may take, you know, 10 or 20 or whatever minutes to find it, right? You go to the M365 chat, you know, asking, can you find me that last version? And then it will come up. And, you know, 80% of the times it will come up with the correct answer. So that's a fantastic enabler. Not to, you know, to talk about imagination of people. Like actually, people in colleagues in South Africa would even ask, you know, how many days of holiday do I have? Okay, and they will tell you, you have, you know, whatever, 25 days left or 20 days left of holiday. And say, you know, I was thinking of going to Tokyo. When is the best time to go to Tokyo? And they will come back and say, you know, when the cherry blossom season. And you're going to have a conversation about people engaging with the bot. You know, combining the corporate information, like the number of days of holiday I have left, with, you know, general advice on what do you do with your life. I mean, it's really...
It's insane.
So it's really exciting. Yeah.
Cool. So we're almost out of time, Nicholas. I've had a pleasure speaking to you.
Likewise.
It's been great talking to you. I wish we had longer, but we've had a few technical issues. So thank you, and hopefully we'll see you again. I'd like to invite you back to the show. We'll probably be back here next year and wherever else we'll be in the world.
Absolutely.
But it would be great to continue the conversation and see what's happening at MTN. So I really appreciate your time this morning. It's been great meeting you.
Thank you very much. My pleasure.
Thank you.
All the best.
Thank you, gentlemen. Really, really enjoyed our conversations on a number of topics. And of course, you know, football had to play a part in some of them as well. But my hats go off to you. Really, really inspiring projects that you're working on in Africa and in Brazil. I look forward to speaking to you again very soon about how they are progressing. So if you like that episode, please subscribe to our podcast on all the usual podcast channels. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts and enjoyed the show, please rate and review. And also visit our website, amdocs.com/The Great Indoors, where we have a new sizzle reel, a nice compilation of all the guests that we spoke to in Barcelona as those episodes roll out every week. So we'll be back next week for more great conversations. And until then, I'm Matt Roberts for Amdocs in Barcelona. Have a great day, wherever you are.